Hello, everybody, and welcome to the UFC Pick Show, hosted by myself, and I'm joined again by Ollie, who, as we know, is terrible at making picks, so this is always going to be fun.
This is the week.
this is the week. That's going to be the story every
Episode three. Let's go.
I'm going to note that we've got the Raptors here, so if you hear any cackling or giggling in the background, you'll know it's them. All COVID clear. They went and got their nose swabbed the other day, and they've been released from
beautiful
their cages.
Experience, isn't it?
Beautiful.
COVID test.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful.
I was daydreaming back yesterday to when things were different and when they were like for whatever reason, it was Cage Warriors in Newport. And I was thinking about like those fights and those events because they were always mad crowded and packed when like Jack Shaw was fighting. And like, it just seems like a different life, a different...
Can't wait to go back to that.
Yeah,
too. You're not homeschooling.
Well, I'm
get me started about homeschooling.
That's true. Totally. I'm homeschooling myself.
That's easy.
I don't think it is. Okay.
Right. This is the week, is it? It's a banger.
This is the week,
this
is it? Where you get some right picks.
I hope people aren't sleeping on this. I don't think they will be because we've had a week off, haven't we? Even
well, we have,
feel
yeah.
like it.
Yeah.
We've had a week off and there was no UFC last weekend.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
Like the weekend just flies by and I don't realise it's been and gone.
I think people will be keen for this. I hope they've looked at the card and not underestimated how good it is.
Well, I'm going to be excited about a lot of these fights, so that will hopefully transfer to some other people. So the current time when we're recording this is Monday, and we're working with a couple of different fight cards. So the most up-to-date one is that I've got in front of me is the Wikipedia one, plus a couple of other fights that we know are on that card.
We're a bit subject to change, aren't
we? A little bit subject to change. But so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about all 12 fights that we know are on the card right now. And then if they change order or whatever, you'll just have to bear with us. The UFC trying to turn these shows around so quickly, it leaves a bit of time for the... it leaves them little time to get the cards together. Okay, so we'll start with the featherweight bout, Sungwoo Choi against Yusuf Zalal. Go on, give me your first thoughts on this
one. I think this is going to start this big card off with some fireworks, don't you?
I think so. I mean, although Tapology has got Valiev against Martin Day, but that would also do the same thing.
Yeah,
that would also kick it off big. Now let's focus on this one. Zalal against Choi.
Yeah, I think this is great. I think Choi is really, really, really good fighter. And I think he's had a bit of a tough run. This will take him 2-2, I think, in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke about Evloev last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
And how good he is. And that was a hell of a fight.
Horrible debut.
Yeah.
Horrible debut. Because there's just no breathing room in that fight. And you know, when you've got someone who's a wrestler like Nick Lentz, who wasn't able to keep Evloev off him, like Choi's a tall, rangy, kind of awkward striker, but he just couldn't keep him off.
He did pretty good, right?
He did
do pretty good.
He did well for what he was up against, but it was a horrible UFC debut. Yeah. And
he probably did better than he should have done.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the odds were against him going into that one in a big way. I mean, the thing, Movsaivla was coming in as the M1 champ as well.
And so solid, we both agreed he's going to be a really good prospect, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Choi dealt with him as good as he could deal with him,
yeah.
Because he's long and he's tall and he's got quite crisp striking, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he didn't have a chance to get too much of that off against Evloev, but he did what he could do.
Yeah,
and you know, I think he's gonna bring some fire to Zalal.
I think so. It's just because they've both got a nice high pace of striking. They're both up for a fight. But the difference is you've got Zalal that's going to be on his bike moving away like he was against what's his name? Why am I forgetting his name? He was on the Fight Island card, the first
Taporia.
One.
No.
Hang on. Austin Lingo.
Right.
Because you're forgetting him like Austin Lingo. Yeah. So like he forced Lingo to chase him constantly and it got really frustrating for him. But he was also punishing him as he was on the way in. So you've got Zalal, who's going to be skirting the octagon as much as he can. And I think that's going to allow Choi just to kind of try and walk him down and strike with him.
And he's quite... Choi, he strikes crisp and straight, right? So he's down the pipe. And, you know, I think he's going to catch him a little bit. You watch the Taporia fight, how many times he could have got subbed.
Mm.
Like, that was an easy way out there for him if he was too tired and didn't want it anymore. And five or six times he just kept working and kept working. And, you know, I know he lost that fight at the end, but he did pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And this like Sungwoo Choi is the challenge for him is going to be getting to Zalal.
Yeah.
If he can get to him, he can hurt him. But he's got
quite a long
he is a
isn't
long
he?
Yeah, he is.
And if you notice that right hand defense that Zalal uses his shoulder and he lifts himself up and back out of the way, I just wonder if Choi is long enough and crisp enough to land that over that defense.
Well, he's Choi's 6 foot to Zalal's 5'10", and he's got a 2-inch reach advantage as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a high striking rate in comparison, 3.3 for Choi. But a lower accuracy. He's just a game fighter. You know, he's a game fighter. He's an aggressive striker, and I think this is the kind of fight where if he's got good footwork to complement what I've seen of his striking, he might be able to eat the octagon up. And you've got to bear in mind as well, it's in Vegas, so it's going to be the smaller one.
Yeah, right. I don't think Choi will have the wrestling that Topuria had to shut Zalal down. Will he? He doesn't. Well, not that I've seen. He hasn't got that in his game. I don't think we'll get that sort of. That wearing stalemate type work from him.
No, I mean, his defensive grappling looked good, but I don't think it's. Yeah. I don't think it's maybe a. It's going to be a lively
start
one.
Card, isn't it?
Wouldn't surprise me if it's a full 15 minutes. Just looking at the track record of these guys, because Choi's best round is the first one, and I just don't see him being able to get to Zalal when he's got fresh legs. He's going to have to work hard throughout this fight, and if he does get to Zalal, it's going to be later in the fight.
Yeah. Hope people don't miss this. It's on the prelims. That's gonna be an exciting fight.
Which way are you going?
I'm going Choi.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know that's probably a little bit I'll be interested to see what the odds are, but a little bit against that. I think he might catch him.
Mm.
But I love both of them really. Like Zalal, I think he's gonna be significant in the years to come.
Dude, he was telling me about this it's like a blood disorder that he's got. Tapology's advertising me the amp that I've just bought. It's like up on my front page here. I've got it already.
The rhythm is strong right now.
Isn't it, right? What was I saying? Zalal, yeah. When I interviewed him in Fight Island, he was like, I mean, he's a firecracker. Like, and he's got one of the rings on, the heart rate monitor rings.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's sitting on the sofa just bouncing away, just buzzing with energy. I'm like, are you like this all the time? He's like, yeah. He's like... And he was telling me about this blood disease, this blood disorder he's got, which has his resting heart rate much higher than normal. And I'm like, so what's your heart rate right now? Bear in mind, he's sitting down in an interview.
Relaxing.
It was like plus 120, just sitting there, just going. So he's like...
Man. You'd be lean as, wouldn't you?
Well,
all the time.
I mean, he never holds still. But then again, Sung Woo Choi is built very much the same, but he's just a bit longer. Okay, so you're going with Choi,
are you? Choi, I think.
Yeah, I like that pick.
Know, we'll see.
I mean, I like both of them, and they've both got skills to, do well. I mean, Zalal might look like fire after coming off that last fight, that loss.
Nah, Choi, gonna go with it.
Okay,
there we go. One from one. I'm already equal to last week.
Okay, so let's jump about. Let's have a look at the other fights that are not officially on the Wikipedia card right now. So let's look at Martin Day against Timur Valiyev. So this was. Valiyev against Julio Arce, who you could talk about for 20 minutes now. You've researched him thoroughly.
Yeah, it's too late now.
And then he's off the card.
He's out.
He withdrew right at the point where you watched the last fight in his career chronologically.
So before the UFC, Valiyev was on a streak, right?
Yeah.
He just banged 6 wins in a row, got to the UFC, no contest.
Yeah, but it was... There was still a lot to get from that. I mean, it wasn't a no contest until the fight was lost. And he was knocked out. So let me give you a bit of background on this guy first off. So he's travelled around. He's trained with a lot of people. His affiliation officially on Tapology still is Jackson Wink. Although he's been training with Mark Henry since like 3-4 fights ago. He's very much Frankie Edgar and Zabit in the same person. Oof. Like he's got... Great footwork, great work rate. He's predominantly southpaw, but he does switch his stance. He's got loads and loads of kicks, like a real taekwondo base.
Yeah,
but then he's grappling.
Before,
you know, if he needs it, he's got that Dagestani handcuff, bind him up, beat him up, choke him out kind of game.
The way he moves with that elastic tension, doesn't he?
Yeah.
From taekwondo, that's what got us talking about it before. He's very bouncy, he's very elastic, moves in and out very reactively. Yeah, I think he... he could be a bit of trouble for a few people, couldn't he?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then that fight with Trevin Jones, it's a no contest on his record. It wasn't originally a loss, and Trevin Jones he tested positive for marijuana, which he must be blazed to have tested positive at that point. And that's not something that's tested for out of competition. So he did take it on short notice in his defense, but let's. If you focus on what Timur did in the first round, like that, some referees would have stepped in and stopped that. Like, he went down from a body shot, and Timur kind of stepped away, started to celebrate, thinking that the fight was over, and then he got back to his feet and he kept attacking him, kept working the body, you know, like beat him up pretty good, but then got caught with a counter shot in the second round. And honestly, it looked to me, and I'm not taking anything away from the punch that Jones landed, but it was almost like Valiev was like, he was cruising at that point.
Okay.
He didn't feel like anything was coming back. You know, a bit like when Volkov fought Derek Lewis.
Right.
You know, kind of cruising, like we're in third gear, finish lines in. And he just lunged in and got caught.
And we will touch on that later, right? But yeah. He was quite comfortably winning that fight, wasn't he?
Comfortably.
Quite comfortably.
Yeah.
This is not a nice fight for Martin Day with three losses in a row.
It's not.
And then you have to fight Valiev.
It's not. And short notice as well. But then of all the fights that Martin Day's had, this is the kind of fight that's going to let him shine. Because he is, I mean, you know, he does have good strikes for his weight class. He does have, good power for his weight class, should I say. He's got a good striking arsenal. He's got a taekwondo background. Lots of kicking in his game. But he's got fast hands as well. And he's just, he has had a bit of a bad run. I mean, this is going to be an electric fight because both of these guys are very, very talented. But like, you look at like split decision loss to Li Pingyuan, who's just a difficult person to get a hold of. Then you get caught. He got caught by Davy Grant, which was a good performance by Grant. And then the guillotine against Anderson Dos Santos, he got caught slamming him. He was just being lazy.
He's in the saloon now, isn't he?
It's a horrible place to be, three in a row.
Backed up, last chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, Valiev isn't a killer at this level.
Mm.
Like, he's not obliterating people. If anything, he's hurtful, but he's not damaging. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm still locking him in.
I'll be honest, I enjoyed researching him, and it often gets to the time now where I'm like, oh, who have I got to watch now? And I'm like, okay, let me soldier through a couple of fights. And it's good because I'm kind of in a different place when I'm watching them, and you know, I see more patterns and stuff. But sometimes, very occasionally, I'll put a fighter on and I'm like, oh, like I'm learning things by the way they're stitching together.
When you started watching him, what made you go like that? What was it?
Because he's got a very lively kicking game, but it's very well applied. And what you see from most people crossing over to Taekwondo to MMA is that they can't fully apply the kicks because they don't understand the breakdown of the range. Like, they feel like the answer to everything is Taekwondo, like automatically. Like, that's why I got kicked off the football team, because my answer to headers was kicks. Oh. So, like, I end up catching somebody in the face with some studs when they were going up to head the ball and I was kicking it. Like, it kind of becomes
that's a
rule like
set problem.
It's like an automatic, like, second nature thing. Like Taekwondo almost encourages you to, like, you know, switch the light off with your foot. And
yeah.
Like, it's almost like an ambidexterity, but not with left and right, but with hands and feet.
Yeah, right.
A bit like BJ Penn with his, you know, with his leg control when he's grappling.
Mm.
Like, and most good kickers get caught trying to kick all the time. Barboza, another one.
Right.
You can run him down because he tries to kick against everything.
And you feel like Valiev has better understanding, just applies it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Has got the skill, but knows how to apply it.
Knows how to apply it.
Yeah.
Nice striking skills. Struggles to finish. Struggles to finish. Has been in lots of fights where I felt like he was just all over the guy. Just couldn't finish.
This is a narrative we'll come back to with some people further up the card, innit?
Stamen. Yeah, that fight in particular, I looked at that and I thought to myself, that could be a banging 15 minutes.
We'll chat about it later, but Volkov as well to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Valiev, lock him in.
Lock him in, okay.
I like him, exciting. Valiev. I'm afraid Rosa and Edwards has been thrown on me.
It's been thrown on you?
Yeah,
I wouldn't necessarily say I throw it on you.
Not prepared for it at all. okay. You might have to cover this one. But
no
I
worries.
Will say, I really liked Edwards when she came, when she was on Fight Island.
Yeah.
Really liked her. I thought she was super athletic. Seemed to maybe need a bit of time to settle in, but hot prospect, right?
100%. You're absolutely on the money. And like, I mean, I can wrap this one up pretty quickly. And I mean, no disrespect to Rosa, but this should be a pretty easy pick for Edwards. If she's the fighter that I think she is. Mm-hmm. So like that first fight on Fight Island, it was like she took it on short notice for a start. She was a little bit kind of, I mean, she was attacking immediately, wasn't she? She had that armbar attack, which was really nice. But like her strength is her striking. I remember saying this to DC before the fights, before the card started. I'm like she damages people. Like every single one of the fights that I'd seen her in before the UFC, she busts the opponent's nose.
Opposite of Valiev.
Opposite of Valiev. Like brutalizes people. Opposite. Like aggressive, like fast hands, smashing elbows and knees, really nice Muay Thai. She's got a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but I feel like it's a purple belt in Jiu-Jitsu maybe, but I think it's a stronger asset in MMA.
Who's she training with? Where's she out of? Not sure.
I don't. It wasn't a gym. It wasn't like a big gym. No, yeah. No. Carol Rosa's coming off that split decision win over somebody else on the card, Laura Procopio, who's fighting Molly McCann. And that was a hard fight to get through to watch because you got Procopio throwing single shots and Rosa basically just walking her down with decent low kicks and a decent jab. Like, if Edwards is the fighter that I think she is, then she should be all over her. Yeah. And Rosa looks durable. She looks tough. I mean, she's a big girl for the weight class. It won't surprise me if she takes a beating first, but I just think Edwards is a bit better everywhere.
Yeah. Right, then I'll lock in Edwards.
I thought you were going to go opposite. Seems like a gimme pick now.
I'll take that. I'll lock that in.
Okay. Well, let's then roll straight onto Molly McCann, Laura Procopio, because it kind of follows on. So, because Rosa fought Procopio last.
I'm going to try and say this with the utmost respect possible.
Go on.
I couldn't find one thing about Laura that I enjoyed watching when she was fighting. It was difficult to enjoy researching. Apparently, a BJJ is really good, right?
World champion, yeah.
Solid, but
doesn't have the takedowns to back it up.
Yeah, one way or another, she's going to have to get someone to the floor, and her striking was not pretty to watch, was it?
It's all single shot stuff.
Yeah.
It was all single punch stuff.
You know, very little head movement. Maybe two punches at a time at best. With the utmost respect, I did not enjoy watching that.
Yeah. The game plan clear for Molly is that she keeps this fight on the feet and she boxes her up.
Yeah, she absolutely should be winning this.
She
fight.
Should be for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, she's working with Paul Reed, a friend of ours. So she's going to be fit. She's going to be strong. She's going to be healthy. I know he's big on cultivating health in his athletes,
mm-hmm. keeping them close to the weights. They're not cutting massive amounts.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Kind of
so you know, she's going to be in good physically. She's going to be in good condition. She should be winning this fight.
She should
definitely.
It's going to be a test of her takedown offense though, because like Molly can get a little overzealous and she can get caught up and caught and taken down. And if that happens, then as she's scrambling, there is a risk of her giving her back. And that's when we might see some of the skills of Procopio that's got her to the UFC.
Yeah.
I mean, her debut wasn't much, but then again, like her takedowns were just shut down immediately by Carol Rosa. And she didn't have the striking to compare. It was a lot of single shot stuff. And the more she got discouraged with the grappling, the less she wanted to commit with strikes as well.
Yeah, like I feel like if we were in, you know, if we're in Molly's camp, we would have a limited stress about the takedowns. I know the consequence of what could happen if it wants to get to the floor is quite high, but the takedowns aren't great. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd probably be advising to get in there, get in the pocket and let her hands go.
Yeah.
And she'll do some damage because Laura takes shots. Mm. You know, she leaves herself in that pocket long enough that she's going to take some damage. And I think, you know, Molly just should definitely have the striking to win this fight.
Agreed.
I'm definitely knocking Molly in.
Molly, right. Yeah, okay.
For sure.
So you've gone Choi, Valiev,
yep.
Edwards and McCann far. So two more on the prelims as we've got it. Mike Rodriguez, Danilo Marquez next.
Yeah, Rodriguez has stuttered a bit, hasn't he? Hasn't found any form, hasn't found that flow and that rhythm that, you know.
His finish over, what's his name, was good though. Prakniao. Did you watch that? I did watch it. Oh, crushed
last time round when we were looking at Prakniao.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it this time, I watched it last time round. It's just, you know, fighters live off that, you know, they get in this flow state and they get the confidence and, you know, win after win after win. It's such a powerful space to be in, and he just doesn't seem to be able to find that right now. Mm. I don't know a lot about Marquez. I know he's a, you know, he's a big boy at 6'6", and he's a, I think he's a black belt under Damien Maia, so he's gonna have some serious ground game.
He looked very uncomfortable in his UFC debut, though. I mean, he was fighting Khadiz Ibragimov, who's just he's a bit of a chaotic, messy fighter as it is. Like, very aggressive, very scrappy. He did land great low kicks. I will say that. Like, the low kicks that he landed were probably the thing that got him that fight. But it was, he didn't look comfortable. Mm. I will say that. I would say
because of who
that,
he is as a fighter, or because he was his, you know, he's on the big stage and was he overawed by the UFC thing?
I don't know, mate.
He's just not comfortable in that stand-up range.
He's not, I mean, he's not had many fights. I mean, he's only had 12 fights. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's still early in his career. How old is he? I mean, he didn't look particularly young either. So there might be a pressure there with it being, yeah, he's 35. He's 12 wins into, he's 12 fights into his career. He's on a 3-fight win streak and he's 35 years old. Like, it's got to work now. Otherwise it's done and gone.
Yeah.
Like that might be a pressure. Mm. I mean, I've heard that from a couple of other fighters. They've been kind of like, well, you know, if this don't work out, I'm back to the oil fields or the yeah. or the whatever else it is, you know. It's like you can put pressure on yourself. And maybe because it was his UFC debut, maybe there was a pressure there. And Ibragimov, like I said, he's a bit of a lunatic. Mm. Like, he is just wild and messy.
Marquez got the wrestling to get Rodriguez on his back.
I think so. He's got decent body lock stuff from what I've seen. Trips and reaps, gets him past half guard.
That's probably going to be his path to victory in it.
I would think so.
Going to make it.
I mean, Rodriguez is more. I mean, he's a good southpaw Thai boxer. He's got wicked elbows and knees. The thing I was saying in his defense when it comes to grappling is that he works with Joe Lozon, and like Lozon kind of took him in and like basically tuned him up as an MMA fighter from a Thai boxer.
Yeah, I like Joe Lozon.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. Not that I've ever been coached by him, but he seems like he'd be a great coach.
For sure. Especially because he's kind of, yeah, I mean, he's like a veteran, but he's like a new school veteran.
Yeah.
Like, you think back to when Joe Lozon made his UFC debut, which blows my mind. He was like 20, yeah. He looked like he was 11. He was about 21 and he made his debut against Jens Pulver, who was returning to the promotion.
Different decade.
Just well, a not different now, decade.
Different generation.
And ran through it. Like, wrecked Jens Pulver, who was always one of my favourites. When I saw that, I was like, oh, this kid's good.
You know what? I'm going to go with Marquez.
Oh, yeah.
35. This is his shot.
Backed up against the wall.
Go get him, mate. Go get him. Yeah, lock him in.
Yeah.
Put him in. Got to roll with that.
I'm just on the record while the Raptors are out. I think that's a good thing. Okay.
Well, I'm used to not great picks, so we're all good.
preliminary main event.
How is Clay Guida still fighting?
I'll tell you why. It's because he's got a big Lebowski tattoo on his back. That's why. He's chill. 39. He's super chill.
He's 39.
Yeah, but Johnson's 34, and he looks like he's had a lot of hard fights, Johnson does. He never looks like he wants to be in my eyes. He's had a lot of 35 fights he's had.
Yeah.
Knocked out twice, submitted 9 times.
That is not a record you see very often, is it?
It's not, especially not in MMA. Although there was a point where I think BJ Penn's record was 16-12 and he was a champ.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I'm glad he's back at lightweight. That's the first thing I'll say. Because Johnson, I always thought he looked kind of unhealthy at lightweight. And when he cut down to featherweight, I was like, oh, that's too far.
It's going to change over time, isn't it? That's going to change.
The thing is, when someone changes a weight class, sometimes it's like, okay, I'm changing weight classes because I felt like this is the right thing to do for a while and I'm going to do it now. Other times they're like, oh, I picked up a few losses in this weight class. Maybe I'll move a weight class and refresh my career. Mm. And almost always they move down if that's the game.
Yeah, tactical, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, well, maybe I'll be a bigger, stronger guy in a lower weight class. It just doesn't always transfer. Sometimes it's better to go up. I mean, Michael Johnson, I wouldn't say he's big enough for welterweight, but he's definitely too small for feather. And Clay Guida is just a battery pack. You need to be in full condition just to deal with his pace.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember
how much pleasure has Clay Guida given us from a fighting perspective over the years?
What's his 55 fights, 35-20? I mean, that's a
this
a,
might
a
be
veteran.
It. This might be it.
This might be it for thinking, both of them.
I was thinking that
the wrestling
this
book
might
slips.
Be it, but he is a mainstay on the UFC roster.
Oh, of course he is.
And if anyone is, you know, if he ends up losing, this would be his fourth loss. If anyone is gonna get an extra shot, you'd think they would probably look after Clay Guida, right?
Yeah, but look, you look at that record though. Since 2011, since the end of 2011, his records looked a bit like a traffic light that couldn't make its mind up.
He comes to play, doesn't he?
We go. Let's start him off. Oh, I mean, let's start him off with his 3-fight win streak in March 2010. Triangle jaw injury against win over RDA, win over Gomi, win over Pettis 10 years
Rolling.
Ago. Then
Rolling.
He went, lost to Henderson, lost to Maynard, beat Haoki, lost to Mendez. That was when he went down a weight class, was it? Yeah. Haoki at featherweight, another guy. I mean, he made featherweight a bit easier, I would say, but he didn't look quite as unhealthy. Lost to Mendez, beat Kawajiri, lost to Bermuda, beat Peralta, lost to Thiago Tavares and Ortega, which was a fight he was all over Ortega for the first two rounds and then got caught with that knee when Ortega needed a finish in the last round.
His record is like how he fights.
Down, all over the place.
Can't decide what I'm doing.
All over the place. One of my favourite fights to be live, in fact, it's Fight of the Year 2009, was when he fought Diego Sanchez to a split decision. And the best thing about that is that it was at the Pearl in the Palms, which had about 2,000 seats. And it was
intimate.
Just like, it was
intimate.
Bouncing. It was bouncing. And you've got Clay Guida, who just doesn't hold still. He was getting slapped around his face by his brother before he walked in. And you've got Diego Sanchez, like, spitting all over
Full
his
rage.
Face. I'm not sure whether that was when he was a nightmare or a dream or a...
Somewhere in between.
I don't know. I think he's a Jedi Knight now.
Walking zombie state.
But like Clay Guida got kicked in the head in that fight and it was like someone had put a spring on his ass. He just bounced back to his feet. It was amazing. What a hell of a... And another story I'll tell you about that fight is earlier in that day, because I was staying in the same hotel as the fights were happening, Guida was down by the pool like 6 hours before the event started in the blazing Vegas sun with his headphones on, just sweating like Techno Viking, but
Brilliant.
With too much hair.
Brilliant.
Oh, what a legend.
What a legend. I'm picking him on time's sake. He's a legend.
Yeah.
I want him to, if he's going to go out, I want him to go out on a win and I hope he wins.
I think that's a tough fight for him. But,
it is,
You know.
The reality is, it is a tough fight in it, but
Johnson's super quick. He was beating the hell out of Nate Diaz until Diaz turned it around.
This is his second. So he had a 3-fight losing streak, right? Came back from it.
Yeah.
He's on a 3-fight losing streak. And has he come back from it already, or is this the one to break it?
No, he's on another 3-fight losing streak.
Okay. But maybe he would have that confidence that he can break those streaks. You know,
maybe.
He's done it before. Sometimes all you need is precedent, isn't it?
Maybe. Last person he knocked out was Poirier.
Yeah.
2016.
Yeah.
And he's got a win over Barbosa. Like Melvin Gallard was a big puncher. Thibaut, Lozon. Tony Ferguson, he's got a win over him.
This is actually looking like a bit of a shaky pick. You know. we'll go. I'm still sticking with him.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still going to stick with him.
Okay.
Old time's sake.
Okay.
History of the sport.
Old timer's sake.
Yeah.
I thought you'd go the opposite way out of hair jealousy alone, to
and
be honest.
And he's older than me and still fighting in the UFC, so I'll give him that.
Is he? Is he older than me?
Yeah, well, unless he's 2 days older than me.
Okay, that's good then.
Bearing in mind our birthdays.
Yeah.
Yeah, lock him in.
Okay.
Love him.
Okay.
Clay.
Right, main card time.
Yeah.
What a banger to open up the main card this is. Dariush Fahia.
Yeah.
Carlos Diego Fahia.
Wow.
Rematch.
Yeah, revenge fight, right?
Revenge fight. What did Dariush won the first one by decision, right?
Yeah. And
he's on a 5-fight win streak.
So they're ranking at 10th and 13th. So quite pertinent. Whoever sort of wins this is gonna do themselves some favors in the rankings.
Yep.
3 fight of the nights in a row.
Yep.
Dariush.
Mm-hmm.
And then misses weight.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. Did he set that one on short notice? He may have done.
I'm not sure, but he's an incredibly exciting fighter. Right?
He is. Yeah, very slick, great grappler, really, really high level black belt. His striking's improving constantly. But then you look at the last three wins in particular that Fahey's had. So choked out Pettis. He looked great.
He's only lost to Poirier and obviously
Dariush. So that puts him in a good position, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like you think if he...
Yeah.
If he gets a win here, he's avenged his fight against Dariush, and then his only loss then is to Poirier.
And then he's cemented himself up in that top 10 as well.
Yeah. And a win over Dariush is the kind of fight that gets you the respect of everybody else in the division. Because none of those guys want Dariush on the other end of the phone when they're getting a contract. Like, you're fighting...
All right, then.
It's going to be a hard one.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to do some
really,
homework.
Really important for his career. I think this is a really important fight for him, isn't it? Almost... You know, it's important.
Bit of a crossroads.
Important to both sides, of course, but
17-2. That I mean, he's 36.
Same sort of thing, innit? Like,
still young, still loads.
You're in the top 10.
Yeah,
third degree black belt. You need to keep this train rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which way are you going? I mean, we know both of these guys pretty well.
Yeah, it's razor thin, right?
What I find interesting is that Dariush is an absolute killer on the mat. And Fahey's a third degree black belt, has never been submitted in MMA. So, first of all, I think to myself, well, knowing Dariush and knowing the kind of fighter that he is, he's going to want to try and sub him.
Just to prove a point.
I think, because he's like, every now and then you'll have a conversation with a fighter and there's something about their character that presents itself and you're like, oh, okay, I understand why you're doing this now. Like, you're trying to prove something to yourself as well as everybody else, and he's a very, very intelligent individual. Like, you can just tell that by talking to him, how he breaks everything down. You know, black belt in Muay Thai is not a thing, but Rafael Cordeiro, and then a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as well. Like, you've got to think that he's coming in to get a finish here. There's no way that he's not. I mean, you look at his last few fights as well. Like, he's making a point of finishing guys. Knocked out Holzman with a spinning back fist, knocked out Dracar close, choked out Camacho and triangled Doba. And then he's got a decision win over Moises, is another good win.
I mean, I've got him down as my pick. I do have him down as my pick.
Dariush, yeah.
I think I'm going to stick, yeah. I think I'm going to stick with him. If that missed weight was off short notice, maybe that gives him a little bit of an excuse.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to lock him in. I think I'll go with him.
I remember watching that fight with Fahey and Taisimov at 242. And I like Taisimov, I've always considered him to be one of the best on the roster. And he just walked in and just commanded the whole arena. And Fahey was just not having any of it. He was a dog backed up against the wall.
Yeah, right. Trying to sway me back the other way now.
Of course I am.
Yeah, razor thin. I'll go with what I put down in ink. I'll go with Dariush.
Okay. Go on then. Stamen Ewell.
Well, first of all, Ewell beat a guy called Rick James. That's the funniest thing I could find. It actually genuinely made me chuckle. I'm Rick James, bitch! You'd have Charlie Murphy in the corner, wouldn't you?
He's also got a loss to someone called Patchy Mix.
Wow. Cheers, Mum. Cheers, Dad.
Patchy Mix. Fights out of Jackson Wink.
Oh,
and he's 13-1. You've got to be with a name like that. Everyone's going to want to fight you.
I think Stamen's good.
Yeah?
I think Stamen's really good, yeah. He took Song Yadong to a draw.
Yes.
And I think we both agree Song Yadong will definitely figure in that division in the next few years. He's still 20, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. He's got to be around there, 20, 21.
Which is ridiculously young. And he's already showing a huge skill set and... And an exuberance that only a 20-year-old could probably have. Look, he took him to a draw. He strikes like a wrestler, doesn't he?
It may have been a loss had Song not had the point deducted in the first round for the knee. But, you know...
That's right.
You know what I mean? That's the only thing you got to bear in mind. Like, Song was just... He's just a handful for everybody.
I can't wait to see what happens with him.
Mm.
He's got to be... He's just outside the top 10 now, right?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
I seem to think he was 13th.
He's a real good student as well. 14th.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a real good student as well. He was there when I went over to see Dean at the PI, and like he was like getting like annoyed, not like to the point where he was frustrated, but annoyed with himself that he couldn't get this bit of footwork that I was working.
Right.
And he just kept practicing. Yeah. You know,
well, I mean, I like to see that in an individual. You know, if you're at that PI, there's literally no excuses.
No.
You've got everything you could possibly want. Yeah.
My concern with Stamen is that since he's joined the UFC, he's not stopped anybody. And I mean, I feel bad for him getting the Suloev stretch against Sterling. But that's the only time he's had a fight that's not been to the distance. Like where Dukanwar and Caraway, and they're both split decisions. And then Alejandro Perez, unanimous decision, Kelleher decision. I'm not saying they're not good wins.
It's like a double-edged sword, isn't it? So, you're going into that fight to win the fight. So if you have to win by decision, you sort of have to win by decision. That's not the ideal outcome. But depending on where you are in your career, it is good to be logging that octagon time. It's just in there. It's in the bank. You're gaining experience. You know, those minutes are being sort of piled up in the log.
Yeah.
But
any fighter that says they're happy winning by decision every time is lying.
Yeah.
Like, you want sparking people out highlight reels. You want slamming people to the mat, choking them out.
Gets you on the highway to the stars, isn't it?
There's not a guy on the UFC roster that doesn't really want that. Like, if you could go, you can get 10 decisions in a row or you know, 10 first round stoppages, what do you want?
Yeah, all day.
Like, a lot of people are probably even take a 9-1 record if they can get stoppages over decisions. Yeah. It's like sometimes you've got to roll the dice, and that's what's going to make you stand out. And unfortunately, when you're a fighter that goes to a decision most of the time, it gives these high-level fighters a lot of time to catch you, which happens when you fight. I mean, like Aljamain Sterling caught him. I mean, a Suloev stretch is a very unusual submission to get. Like his defense for everything standard is very good. Not everything's standard at this top level of MMA. And if you're going to crack that top 10, top 15, especially top 5, like, you've got to A, be stopping people before they get the opportunity to stop you. Or B, you know, at least be impactful enough with your shots to start shutting people's games down. I don't feel like Stamen's either of those. But then for whatever reason, when I picture Andre Ewell in my head, I can't see him on conscious legs. I always see him doing that kind of weird dance where he's about to go down. He's got, you know, a couple of split decision wins he's coming off, Jonathan Martinez and Erwin Rivera. But I just remember him being so susceptible to big shots.
Yeah. You think Stamer's got big shots in him to Rocky him? Or do you
looks
think
like
he's gonna...
Mystery's nodding. It looks like he's built like he should.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's built like a He-Man figure.
Like you haven't got it. You've got his reach, though. He seems like
oh, he's definitely got raptor arms.
Hasn't he? T-Rex arms.
Yeah. He's no one to leave the ground if he was doing push-ups.
No. Yeah. I'm swayed a little bit towards Stamen. A little bit.
Dude, oh, it is a good job you called that out. Holy shit. Listen to this.
Super short.
Listen to this. I'm just going to give you a quick rundown because there's a lot of similarities. So 19-3-1 for Stamen, 17-6 for Ewell. So about the same kind of experience. Average fight time, 14-13 for Stamen, 14-35 for Ewell.
Right.
Reach for Andre Ewell, 75, which is the same as mine. Reach for Stamen, 64. He has an 11-inch reach
advantage. He's basically got forearms. He's got forearms attached to his shoulder joint.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Isn't it?
That's
I thought that, but if you look at his somatotype, it is just condensed, right?
I don't want to look at his somatotype.
Well, you know, why not? you spend your life looking at him. What are you talking about? You know, the way he's built, he's sort of thick.
Is he a mesomorph?
He's seriously.
Is he mesomorphic? Seriously, is mesomorphic. Not endomorphic. He's a bit bigger on the scale.
Yeah. Seriously.
I can compete with these boys. It's all good.
He knows.
Proprioceptive non-muscular facilitation. That's the one I always throw in when I'm talking to someone that's educated.
Told him that before.
Yeah. I don't forget things, though. So I don't know what it means, but... Go on, then.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
I think
I think it's going to be a
I think it's 15 statement.
Minute fight.
I think it's Stamen. It's not a particularly attractive fight, is it?
It's not a particularly attractive fight. I think Stamen might try and like wrestle him, grind him up against the fence, head position, foot stomps, drag him down, beat him up on the floor a bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's going to be running onto those 75-inch reach arms. That's a massive reach advantage.
I'll go Stamen. I think he's going to wrestle. Going to wrestle grind, and I think he'll get the win. But
46% takedown accuracy for Stamen compared to 73% takedown offense for Ewell.
Do you have to do that after I've locked the picket?
Of course I do. That's part of the part
is
of
that
the fun.
Part of the strategy.
Although I will say Stamen's average takedowns is three per 15 minutes. So it's like he's taking people down once a round. He's got no submission attempts though. But then Andre Ewell doesn't take people down either.
Look, it's well established you're not going to sway me, and that is not a particularly attractive fight. But the next one is going to be awesome.
Oh, you're moving us on, are you?
I'm moving you on. I've locked maybe it in already. I'm ready to move you're on. Trying to, you
maybe
know,
I'm, maybe I'm
trying
dwelling.
To get up in my mind.
Maybe I'm dwelling happening. On Ewell.
It's not happening. But this next one is definitely happening.
This is a hell of a fight.
Hell of a fight. And we have decided that it's Cape.
Manel Cape.
I guarantee you one thing, in Japan, they will say Cape.
Yeah.
Not Cape, but we'll go with Cape. So that seems to be the accepted practice, yeah. Right?
I'm going on Mike Swick here. If you're wrong, Mike Swick, and you shouldn't be because he trains at your gym, but it's your fault. Yeah, I was listening to the Rising enunciations, and there's no way that... Kappa!
Yeah, that is definitely the way that the Japanese language works. That'll be two. Yeah. That'll be two syllables. Yeah. Kappa. This is not a nice welcome to the UFC.
No, it's not
at all, is it?
It's not. But on the flip side, he was the reserve fighter for the title fight.
He's upset someone.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically in a similar situation to Michael Chandler into the lightweight division.
Okay, let's see what these champions are like.
And Pantoja's up there and has always been up there, and it's kind of. He's kind of ran aground a little bit. What is he, ranked number 5? But he's like, the guys that he's lost to are like Figueiredo and Askarov. They're the guys that are above him.
I love him. I think he's really, really good. He's fought some really tough guys. His sort of record is really well-round, isn't it? He's had a couple of decisions, a split decision. He's KO'd people, TKO people, he's sub people. He's got a nice breadth of skill set. He's 30, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of in the, you know, he's in the prime. I think he's great. Mm-hmm. He beat Marino.
Yep.
You know, that's a big win for him. He's had a crack at the champ, you know, unsuccessfully, but I think he'll get back there. I really, really like him. I think he's going to be great. And I think he's a horrible welcome to the UFC for Cape.
Mm.
Interesting point on Cape that we discussed before this is in Rising, you can fight in shoes.
Yeah.
But you can't head kick.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that if you decide to take your shoes, you decide you don't want to fight in shoes, you can head kick.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But he's, I mean, you can see that the reason that he's chosen to wear shoes in the fights where he can is because he's so explosive. He needs some purchase on the canvas.
Really explosive. Yeah.
Like when he fought Horiguchi, he wasn't wearing shoes in the Horiguchi fight, and he was often... on the floor because he was throwing kicks and falling over.
Right. Okay.
So I think it was kind of a trade off of like I won't throw kicks out, because I mean, like he's got good wrestling, he's got good grappling, he's very chaotic in the way that he approaches things. He reminds me a lot. Like I was watching him last night and it was getting late and I was a bit tired and it was starting to merge with Charles Crazy Horse Bennett.
Right.
Like his fights in Japan were a lot like that, where he was dealing with someone that didn't really quite understand his athleticism and speed and chaos. And he was catching guys with big, wild shots.
Yeah.
Just because of the angles he was coming at and the speed he was able to cover those angles at.
You don't, with Japanese athletes, you don't necessarily, it's definitely not with the same prevalence as other countries, you don't find that super fast twitch athlete.
No.
They just don't.
Like Horiguchi is a bit
monsters
of a, yeah.
Will go all day, anytime you want. You don't tend to find those really fast twitch type 2A explosive guys.
So that's why the fight against Horiguchi was interesting, because he is super quick. Mm. He is very, very fast, Horiguchi. And they were able to kind of match each other. And that was a weird fight because there was a clash of heads. And honestly, it was a bad enough clash of heads that the fight should have just been stopped there, because Horiguchi was clearly concussed from it.
Yeah.
But
was that in Japan?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. He's enough said.
He was still on his feet.
Yeah.
And even that doesn't matter sometimes.
What did the refs do over there when was it back in Pride days?
It was in all of them. Yeah. In all of the
give up.
It was a weird. Like when I was fighting in Cage Force over there, and like I was fighting Monmer in the second round of the tournament, and he was triangles for days. So it was oftentimes I'm like, you know, I like to get deep into a submission before I escape. I'm like trying to squeeze out of this triangle, and I've got my face is like smushed up against the inside of his thigh, and I'm like struggling to breathe. And at the same time, you've got this latex glove in your finger. And he's going, give up, give up. I'm like, I'm thinking about it, but you're not helping. You know,
it's like the putt at the end of the up is the question mark.
Give up, give up, give up. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a different culture over there when it comes to competition, and I don't know whether Manel Capp's gonna transition over quite as well to the UFC because he is very chaotic. Mm. Like there was even a point when they clashed heads, or no, he got poked in the eye when he was fighting Horiguchi. Like he was like standing at the rope, like, and somebody from the crowd shouted something at him, and he just stuck his finger up at them. And then like all of the promos that they've done with Rising, like there was one where his most recent opponent, the guy he's just knocked out in the rematch, what's his name? Asakura.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like they fought the first time and Asakura won by decision. When they were lining up the rematch, the clip was him sitting in the ring at AKA with the laptop in front of him, and when he got this call out, he just stood up and just stomped the laptop, just smashed it to pieces.
Especially for Japanese TV.
Yeah, right. I mean, it might have been a bit of a promo, but he's definitely a bit wild. There's definitely a craziness to him. But then that's matched in Pantoja. One of the reasons why I like him.
Yeah.
He's a maniac.
Yeah.
He's got that craziness, that wildness in his eyes. I remember calling his fight against Neil Seary, and he was just like, he's just got this.
Was it Askarov?
Yeah.
That was an amazing fight.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, you know, I got a load of shit for it, but he was my wild card pick for champ by the end of the year, Pantoja.
Well, I'm definitely locking him in.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
I think he's very exciting. But at the same time, he does leave himself vulnerable. Has he ever been stopped?
He's never been stopped. Yeah, he's only ever lost by decision.
Yeah, he's never been stopped. And he's fought some punches as
well.
He
kind of is one of those guys I can imagine him being the champ.
Yeah.
Just about.
Yeah.
Not locked in, but I can just about imagine him, you know, if he puts a few more together, gets another crack, you know, that could be his time.
Yeah. I felt the reason that he lost to Figueiredo when they fought the first time around was just because Figueiredo was a bit more patient.
Mm.
And Pantoja does put himself at risk in order to land sometimes, which if you're fighting someone like Cap who's got big power.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah. Lock him in.
Yeah. Pantoja. Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. We're almost at the co-main. So Renaud against Macy Chasson.
Oh, Chasson is awkward, isn't she?
Awkward.
Really awkward.
All elbows and knees.
Yeah.
Like, kind of feel like no matter what part of her you hit, it would hurt you more.
Yeah.
I kind of get that vibe from her. She was very frustrated in that loss to Landsberg. Like, she's clearly got big expectations for herself. But then, like such different ends of their career. Like Chasson's 7 fights in, 6-1, at 29 years old. And then on the flip side, you've got Marion Renaud, who's been a PE teacher for about the same length of time she's been alive. 43.
She's really tough and really durable.
Tough,
right?
Talented.
Experienced.
Black belt Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now.
10th or 11th fight in the UFC, I think.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, and been in there with some of the best as well. You know, and like, and has given good accounts of herself. Like, I remember when she was going in against Holly Holm. I mean, that was like half a career ago now. But like, I remember her giving a hell of a fight to Holly Holm.
She gave Raquel Pennington a hell of a fight.
Yeah.
You know, Raquel's tough.
All decisions look. She stopped Sarah McMahon with a triangle. She stopped Talita Bernardo. She stopped Dudieva. And then she's only lost by decision. Jessica Andrade.
She's fought some solid, solid people, but I think she's on the 3-fight skid. And Macy is tough and awkward, isn't she? You'd be better to input here, but I feel like a couple of times I saw Macy sort of close the distance with looping hooks and her head out in front. Mm. It's going to annoy some people that I went that close to the mic. Looping hooks, the head was right. She was sort of leading with the head. I was wondering, you know, like Marion's been around long enough, whether she'll pick that and she'll, you know, she'll throw a couple of straight punches and catch on the way in.
I think Marion Renault's smart enough to know that if she's backing up, and this is a lesson that she should have learned against Holly Holm, because this is how she was getting caught. She should realize that if she's backing up, she's going to get chased down and caught on the end of Chasson's punches. And there is a reach advantage of 4 inches for Chasson. Like, what, 5 inches in height and 4 inches in reach. Like, she'll make that count. The smartest thing for Renault to do, as you said, as Chasson's coming forward with those big looping punches, will be to tuck up and then just level change and get a body lock. Because once she's got that body lock on and she's locked in, I mean, she's got that adult strength that is probably just about to approach Macy when she gets into her 30s. Like, she'll get that body lock clamped to start working those outside reaps. She might be all over her on the ground.
We haven't seen Macy off her back that much, have we?
Not really. Not really.
Yeah, I can't remember seeing her deal with a top game that Marion could bring that, right? She's got that in.
Absolutely, she could.
In her arsenal.
Yeah. I mean, she's got 2 wins by submission, but her ground game by comparison, it's going to be specifically tailored for MMA.
Yeah.
But it's definitely going to be a little bit behind Marion Renault.
Yeah.
I'm just looking to see if there were any fights in the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, she won by Renee Kichoke against Pani Kienzad.
I mean, if Macy manages the distance right, she uses that reach advantage, this should be her fight.
Mm.
You know, she's explosive enough, long enough, awkward enough to pick her apart, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that she lost to Lena Landsberg was because Landsberg switched it up and took her down.
Yeah.
Like, in most of Landsberg's fights, she's the elbow queen. Like, she's a Thai boxer. So that probably caught her by surprise. I mean, she may be expecting more of a grappling approach from Renault, but it doesn't mean she can stop it. She's still so young in her career, 6-1, and then you look at the fighters. I know it's a 3-fight losing streak, but you look at who she's been fighting.
Everyone, right?
You know, whenever she's fought anyone that's not been a high level striker, a high level fighter in this weight class, she's always done well.
Yeah. I think it's Macy's to win. It is Macy's to win. It's closer than I thought it would be. As we talk it out, it seems like it's getting closer and closer, but I think it is Macy's to win.
It's Macy's fight to win and your pick to lose.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I quite like Renault. I think she's good, solid, experienced fighter. Let's lock in Macy.
Okay.
Yeah. Go with it. Not happy with that, are you?
I don't care, mate. It's your picks.
Elbows. Cut.
Your picks.
Yeah, cut.
Go on then. I've just recorded the war rooms for these two, so make sure you look out for those on the channel. Go on, Sanhagen, right. Edgar.
I'll tell you a little story. So I was coming back from Tokyo one night on the train.
I'm going to eat a protein bar while you tell me.
Very, very early.
Not into the mic.
It's the first train back, which makes you basically think about how badly your life is going, because if you're getting the first train back in the morning,
after you've been out all night,
you start having a few problems internally about what's going on with your life. Anyway, it's the first train back. I'm not in my best shape. You know, I've looked better, but I've had a good night. The sun's coming up, which is another thing that makes you question your life. And then I'm sat on the train.
Is that why it's the land of the rising sun?
Maybe, yeah.
Because you're on the first train back when you've got
God, what am I doing?
Still drunk and hungover at the same time.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm on the train. There's a Yakuza dude, genuine Yakuza dude, the opposite side of the train. It's just me and him. Suit, earphones in.
Fingers missing.
Sleeve tattoos, spot it a mile off. Anyway, he is absolutely off his head. He's got his earphones in. He's going like this. And he's chewing at the same time. And this goes on for 40 minutes non-stop, like it's a cardio workout. It's going bang. The first thing I thought of this fight was, that's the same tempo this fight's going to be at. It's just going to be like this. just for 25 minutes. It was amazing. And it's exactly how I think the tempo of this is going to go.
Yeah.
I'm a massive Sanhagen fan. I think, I just think he's close to having it all locked down, pretty much. Physically, he looks... Do you know what he walks around at?
I don't, but he doesn't cut a massive amount.
He looks
amount
really
of weight.
Comfortable at that weight. Yeah. Like he looks like that. This is definitely his weight to be at.
5'11 at bantamweight as well.
doesn't seem to be really pushing himself to make that weight, which obviously frees up all of that time to concentrate on his training and his energy management. Long, lean, highly skilled. You can see that he's very, very well trained. We've talked about this a lot before, about why you switch stances from orthodox to southpaw. He does it for the right reasons, for sure. He completely understands why he's doing it, and he does it in a fluid manner where he's doing it within combinations. And for me, because of our conversations, that's the first thing I see for, first thing I look for when I see that. It makes me think they definitely understand what they're doing. He'll start the combination orthodox, and he'll change the space and manipulate the space by changing his stance within that combination. Whereas some people we've talked about recently is they'll close a distance, throw a couple of strikes, come out, change the stance and go back in, which isn't necessarily doing what they think it's doing. They're just changing the stance because it's now cool.
Exactly.
Change your stance. And it's the evolution of the sport. I've got to do it, but they're not doing it for the right reasons. They're just changing their stance, right?
Exactly.
And that is definitely not the case with Corey, for sure.
No. He utilises those steps through too well. And it's like if you look at Frankie Edgar's footwork and his boxing skills, like if you go into an old school boxing gym in New Jersey and you ask them to teach you basics.
That already makes me smile. When you think about that, it makes me smile.
Because they're cool places.
Old school.
We've been in a few of them.
In New Jersey.
But if they're your only options, because MMA schools aren't a thing when Frankie Edgar's starting out,
yeah,
as they were, you're a wrestler that's now going to learn boxing. So you're being taught boxing to box, not to MMA. And unfortunately for Edgar, like, he learned all of that footwork, which served him so well throughout the most of his career. But now he's getting to the stage where he's now starting to have to adapt his own footwork to keep up. Like, he had a bad habit of crossing his feet at one point, and Aldo punished him badly for it. The thing that he's finding now is that as he's taking on these younger fighters that are learning MMA together, they're understanding that I'm punching you in this direction. If you go over there, there's no point in me pivoting on my back foot and turning into a same orthodox stance. I can go bang, bang, bang. I move my back foot forward and I'm already on your front foot.
Yeah.
And if you've got two fighters working like that, you can get that space between them, which stays fairly consistent. Whereas if you have one fighter that's moving with a slower footwork, the other one's going to catch it up eventually. They're going to either force it into a corner or walk it onto something.
These are some of my favorite conversations we've had is about that evolution of footwork and how the whole of the octagon is being manipulated by the guy that truly understands it. In my opinion, I reckon Corey's probably doing it better than most people in the sport. I haven't seen anyone really that is doing it to that level.
He just fights in a way that makes him look like he doesn't understand footwork because it's not traditional movement patterns. But his movement for MMA is much better. And he's not always adamant on controlling the space as well. Sometimes he'll allow someone to work in his direction and he'll move off and find his way in as they attack him, which is also a massive benefit for someone like Frankie Edgar. Because Frankie's good at two things. He's good at moving laterally and countering and wrestling and you know, keeping that level change with the jab consistent. So, you know, when you see him move, you're like, lower my hands, bang, bang, bang. Lift my hands up. Now he's in on my legs. Like, that pace that Frankie Edgar brings is really useful.
He must be slowing down a touch.
He has to be.
It's just natural. He must be slowing down a touch. And that was such a key point of difference for him, that if that starts waning a touch, you know, that's... I hate seeing him get hurt. He's a bit of an icon of the sport, right? He's that tough, proper tough. Like, proper tough. Some of those wins where he came back from just getting...
Mate, those Gray Maynard fights.
With Gray, right? He just got beaten up and came back to win it. And you couldn't help but sort of, you know, fall in love with that archetype of who he was. But he's definitely getting slower. And I just don't like... He does that... You know, when he gets caught, he does that stiff leg and he pauses almost for a second and then he carries on. I almost have to turn away because I don't want to see him get hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're going with Sanhagen, aren't you? I can feel it.
I'm definitely going to go with Sanhagen. Yeah. The other point too is I think he's in Colorado and he's got that Colorado cardio, right?
Colorado.
Amazing.
Trademark.
I genuinely...
Someone's going to use that now and open up a spin studio or something, aren't they?
In Colorado. I genuinely did this.
That's a great idea.
It did a... treadmill test, so maximal treadmill test, 30 seconds on, 20 seconds off, as many times you can at set speed, many times you can. I did it in Ottawa for a week, three times a week. Then I went to, and then we went to Colorado for 2 weeks and did it three times a week for 2 weeks in Colorado, many as I can. I think I probably got to maybe 10 in a row in Colorado. Then we went to New York week after, so dropped down to sea level, 22 on the bounce. So I'd just been hammering myself at altitude, dropped down. There might be a little bit of placebo effect here, so I knew this was going to happen. Dropped down to sea level in New York and just hammered it out.
Yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah.
Was that the same trip where you lost about £1,600 leaving your roaming charges?
1,200 roaming charges. Don't tell Wad.
Damn.
Yeah.
There's definitely something in it. I mean, Frankie Edgar's always had like unquestioned condition anyway. I don't think. This is 15 minutes because it's co-main.
Both should be a walk in the park.
It should be a walk in the park for both.
Despite the tempo they're probably going to set for each other.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that's going to be a problem.
You've got to get out the gate quick if you're Frankie though.
Yeah.
Like if Frankie just comes and like you know when he fought Yair Rodriguez and everyone saw that matchup and they were like, oh, like I think maybe this is the end of Frankie's career. Because you just felt like
that's his MO, right? Please write me off. Just write me off.
You just felt like Yair Rodriguez was going to do some spinning 360 heel kick and just knock him out, and then that would be the end of Frankie's run. And he just manhandled Yair Rodriguez. He might do that here with Corey. He might come in, he might clamp onto his legs, force him to the canvas, and then keep stacking him, in which case that height and reach then just makes you like uncomfortable. You just get cumbersome.
I mean, Sanhagen's takedown D and his work once he's been taken down, he's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Constantly switching hips and moving and making it very, very difficult to pin him down.
He does sometimes have to dig himself out of a rough first round, though.
Right.
And if Frankie got caught
early by Aljamain, right?
He did.
Which...
And Alcantara was all over him. Yeah. He subbed him in the first as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love him. I think he's I think he's really good, and I'd like to see him go up and contest for the gold.
Yeah, choosing with your heart. I see. Same as the Conor fight, right?
It went well that time.
You got so much shit for that. It was hilarious. Come on, main event then. Heavyweight veterans.
Ooh. Right,
go on.
That is one of the most ridiculous records I've ever seen. It's got to be in MMA, right? Bojanski, Bada, Spong, Saki, Ertz, Vitor, Shogun, Chuck, Mia, Krokop, Hunt, Brock.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Like, he's fought everyone worth fighting, basically. And he's beaten a lot of them.
Yeah.
And he constantly reinvents himself.
Yeah.
Like he starts out as a Dutch kickboxer, then he's a guillotine wizard, then he's a weird kind of counterpuncher boxer where he's, like, doing this kind of weird shifting. Now he's a grappler and ground and pounder.
It seems weird, like someone's gone, do you know what guillotines are? And he's gone, yeah, I do. Fuck, I'm going to get really good at them. And he just does that for a bit.
Yeah.
And then he finds something else, he does that for a bit. But obviously what it's ended up being is he's super well-rounded and everything. He does confuse me, though. And we touched on this privately the other day. So as you go up through skill set, obviously your reaction to a stimulus becomes just enough to counter that stimulus. But he seems to react to stuff quite a lot. So if someone sort of closes the distance and throws some hands at him, he'll slip out of the way, but he'll slip out of the way by about 3 foot when he could slip out of the way by about a few inches. And it confuses me because it seems to me that by his level of experience and skill set, he would have that down. He would just do the minimum amount to nullify the attack.
Yeah.
Or he's been hit so much that you'd rather not get hit again.
But the thing is, the margin for error at heavyweight is obviously, you know, it's much narrower because these guys, I mean, look at like the Jairzinho fight. Look at that. Fifth round, 456. He was 4 seconds away from winning that fight comfortably on scorecards. Like, when you know the margin for error is so narrow.
And, don't take the risk.
Yeah, and you're fighting guys that are very awkward. Like, I mean, every single one of those fighters that he's faced is an awkward striker. Like, Rosenstrike is fairly well polished, which is why he was able to stay away from him for almost 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But then Olenek looks like he's punching, I don't know, it looks like he's got those balloons on his hands. Like, he's just kind of awkward and just weird. And Walt Harris as well has not got a traditional skill set. He's always moving around and doing weird things. Sakai had quite a nice systematic approach, but then, you know, yeah, I think if he's fighting someone that has got movement patterns that are unfamiliar to him, he gives him a bit more space. Yeah, and I think that's why he's so good at decision making in MMA, which is why he's still in the sport as it is. I mean, obviously, yeah, I mean he's been knocked out, but it's been by the biggest punches in the division. Like Rozenstruik and Ngannou, Stipe stopped him, and you can't say Stipe's not a big puncher.
Yeah.
He got taken down by Blades and stopped on the floor with elbows, but then went to Blades' camp, which is also Colorado, right? So he's got that Colorado.
You know, circling back around to what you're saying, watching his physique change over the years as he go through his career, horse meat and no horse meat and a bit more horse meat and a little bit less horse meat. It's fascinating, right?
Yeah.
And then for me especially, it was interesting to see what that then did to what he could do in the octagon, because...
And how it changed his style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other day I watched him against Chuck, and he comes out in the tie stance and he's super springy. Like he's super springy. Every time Chuck came anywhere close to him, he'd throw a knee and it'd be like lightning. And he was, you know, he was kind of lighting Chuck up for a little bit.
Kicking the mic.
Oh, dear, yeah, I'm getting excited.
The whole table.
It's fine.
Even my mic moved there.
Get to the main event, I get excited about it.
That's it. You're banging on the table next time.
I will, yeah.
He was very elastic, wasn't he?
And then he just went...
He had a much more different physique. But then he came in and when he was fighting Mir and when he was fighting Brock in particular, I mean, that was a different individual. Like you imagine if you could stand like K1 over him, and I'm talking about early days K1 as well, because he kind of returned to K1 when he was the Hulk. But like if you stand those two people next to one another, they don't look like the same individual. No, and his brother as well, Valentin Overeem, he's a monster. He was a little bit earlier than Alistair in the MMA scene. But Valentin Overeem had a real name around Europe, was a scary individual, but then brought Alistair in and trained him up. And
the best thing about that Chuck fight is when Dana gets in the ring afterwards. Dana's got like... I've got a massive bald patch here, the rest of his hair. He's young and he's like, he's got a suit that doesn't quite fit him. You know, so it was amazing. He would have been Chuck's agent at the time, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, he would have been acting as Chuck's agent based on his relationship with the UFC.
Yeah.
Kind of like when they went over to Pride and Chuck fought to Rampage as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool, man. I enjoyed watching those Pride days.
Love it.
Oh, man, the crowd.
Wild West.
The entrances and the crowd. I know everyone's, you know, it's a bit of a cliche. Everyone sort of talks about it, don't they? But it was a bit different, wasn't it?
Yeah. Imagine that. If you look at all the walkouts that Overeem's done, the different versions of walkouts.
Yeah.
Like he's gone from walking out the Saitama Super Arena with 90,000 people when he's basically 300 pounds of Seabiscuit. You know what I mean? He's like massive and scary and superhuman looking. And there's like 90,000 people in the crowd that are looking at him like he's Superman. And now he's walking out in the Apex fighting Baby Giraffe, who's going to be a real pain in the ass to fight. I'd
love to go back to the Saitama Arena and watch something like that.
I always wanted to fight Gomi in there.
Yeah.
That was my dream. I was so close.
Set it up.
I've got the Rising gloves already. Sign me up.
I think...
Go on, pick it.
Well, not quite. We haven't talked about Volkov yet.
But okay.
I can't see Volkov as the champ. I think he's got a good skill set, and I like him as a fighter, but there's a numerous number of fights where he should have finished those fights. He was dominant enough in those fights where he should be finishing that fight if you're going to take this through to the next echelon of being, you know, being the champ.
Still going.
You know, he's put a lot of people under a lot of pressure, and he hasn't found a way to finish. And that's what makes me think I can't picture him as being the champ. No, not feeling that.
I understand what you mean, and I know what you mean. The problem with this division is that everybody in it has got hands. Mm. They've got heavy hands. Like the Derek Lewis fight, obviously he was on his way to a victory there, and then got caught with a big punch. And I would say of all the people in this division, Derek Lewis is not the fastest when it comes to punching.
Yeah,
like Ngannou could cover that distance much quicker. I would say Rozenstruik can as well. Stipe has got great footwork and boxing, and you know for sure he's he's going to be able to find his way inside and clinch with him. But the fact that he's taller than most of these guys and the fact that he knows how to fight like a tall fighter.
He's aggressive and he takes a step of the octagon and he puts a lot of pressure on people.
Like that, I mean, that fight against Walt Harris was a bit of a different version of him. Like he when he came into the UFC, was it Tim Johnson? Yeah, I remember calling that fight. It was just like a steady pace and he just kind of worked, you know, he did what he needed to do to win the fight. And it wasn't a lackluster performance, but it was certainly nothing to, you didn't look at him and go, oh, we've got a contender here. We knew he was a contender because of what he'd already achieved in M1. But when he came over, like Tim Johnson, Roy Nelson, like both of those fights were kind of, yeah, we're going to need to see something more out of this guy, especially given the fact that he was basically beating up two guys that were like heavyweights because they weren't in shape. But then he fought.
You always get a text when that's on. Exactly. Like, these aren't heavyweights. he's a lazy light heavyweight.
Yeah. But then when he fought Stefan Struve, all of a sudden I realized to myself, like, he's very, very intelligent at how to use his reach. Because that was always a criticism of Struve, is that he's the tallest fighter in the UFC and can't keep people on the end of a jab.
I like what Volkov does with his front leg. He teeps, kicks, and they're not powerful, but he uses them as range finders and just that irritating damage accumulation.
Yeah.
But he seems to be really light and be able to whip that front leg up quite easily. It's quite, you know, I saw that a lot as I was sort of researching this. I saw that a lot over a lot of fights. He uses that really effectively, doesn't he?
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be intimidated by Overeem. I don't think he's necessarily going to give the center up to Overeem. I think it might be smarter if Overeem's trying to clinch with him, because I think he'll defend takedowns better against the fence. But the way I can see this fight going is Overeem's, like, okay, if it goes in Volkov's direction, it's going to be because Overeem's come out and has tried to push him back with presence and with the threat of striking, and then he's level changed and taken and tries to take him down. But Volkov's been against the fence, so he's been able to defend it against the fence and then turn it around. And now he's starting to push Overeem back. And that's the point where you get Overeem kind of skirting along the edge of the octagon, because he's not a high work rate fighter compared to Volkov. So if Overeem's like skirting along the edge of the octagon looking for that perfect shot, and Volkov's just not giving him the respect that something might be coming, he might just be able to keep teeping him and jabbing him and, you know, maybe just kind of outpoint him and beat him up over the distance.
You can back Overeem upright. You can back him up and he'll sit with that double
just
guard.
Just leans back against the fence.
Yeah, in a straight line.
Lets people unload.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? I wonder with Volkov's reach and the fact that you can make Overeem do that, whether he can pick him apart a little bit. But then is he going to just fall into one of those traps where he expends a lot of energy and Overeem's like, yeah, I got this, we're all good.
Yeah.
And then...
Overeem did that against Thingy, didn't he? He did it against Rosenstrike. Like, any time Rosenstrike was being aggressive, he would just back up and cover up and just let him work. I would argue that Volkov's not going to stand in the boxing pocket and unload hands. I think his attacks are going to be more varied.
Okay.
So, like, even if you are covering here, there's still that front kick to the midsection, which completely dismantled Walt Harris.
If Volkov's going to do it, if he's going to make a run for the title, this is a really, really important fight.
You could do with a stoppage as well, really, just to kind of get people on board. I mean, I know that Walt Harris one was a good finish, but stopping Overeem puts people on notice.
So he's sixth. He's ranked sixth, I think. Mm. If he wins this, he's sort of, you know, he's putting himself... He doesn't want to drop down in, you know, the LNX and the JDS. You don't want to be down there. That's a tough place to then have to start that run again, you know?
Yeah, exactly that. It's a big opportunity for him.
Yeah.
For sure, it's a big opportunity. But with the amount of experience he's got 40 fights, 32 wins, 21 knockouts.
Overeem's 47, 18, and 1. And in MMA, right?
Mm. Yeah. Front kick to the face from Volkov. TK on the ground.
You know what? I don't like picking against Overeem, but I think Volkov might do it. You haven't. Can we just note down? Under no pressure at all from Mr. Hardy.
Overeem's experience, and he's wily, he's got good... I reckon Overeem's going to come out and take him down and ground and pound him.
Yeah.
So you're going for...
I'm going to go for Volkov, but that is a very likely scenario that could happen. I'll give you that. But I, you know what? Actually, I hope Volkov gets this win, because I think it will... you'll put him up in that sort of top five, and it's good for the division, isn't it?
For sure.
He's an awkward puzzle for people to try and figure out.
Yeah.
And that's what we want.
And the current champs lost to Stefan Struve may mean that he can't deal very well with taller fighters. There you go. So
interesting.
Volkov might have a shot.
What's up, YouTube fam? We have just hijacked UFC picks show, and now you're gonna get some even worse picks from me and Jamie. We're gonna keep it short and sweet though. Just gonna do the main card. But how are you, Jamie?
Yeah, all good, man. All feeling refreshed from Fight Island. And yeah, ready to get back into it. Good. Looking forward to this card as well. I think it's going to be a great, great card.
It is, man. It's been slept on a little bit, as per usual, these kind of cards. But I think that's a good sign to say it's going to be some bangers, because that's how it usually goes. First card, first fight on the main card, mm-hmm. Fiera and Daroush.
Yeah, I think this will be a good fight. I'm looking forward to this fight a lot. I think it will be a back and forth, just a good battle between them both. I've picked Carlos Ferreira over Daroush on this one.
Have you?
Yeah. I just think they've both got, you know, coming off good fight win streaks at the minute, but I just like Ferreira. Last time I seen him fight, I think he's got good momentum, and I think he'll beat Daroush.
I'm going to go the other way.
Oh, okay.
I'm going, I always say his name, Neil Daroush, but it's Beniel, isn't it?
Beniel Daroush, need to get that right. Yeah.
Everyone slays me in the live chat when I'm saying these names.
They are tough. Some of them are really tough, though, to get your tongue around.
Yeah, they are. Beniel Daroush really isn't that hard when you look at the name, though. I just completely ignored the B. But he's awesome, man. He's really, really good. I think we are going to see a submission finish here.
What, from Daroush?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, how do you think it's going to end?
Well, I think it's going to go the distance, to be honest.
Do you?
Yeah. And I think Carlos Ferreira is going to beat him over the distance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have fought before as well. And that was a decision. Daroush won on decision. But I think it's going to be that, like that again, but Ferreira's going to come out on top.
Mm, Ferreira is good, man. He's a nice guy as well. What about, all right, so we'll go on to the next one. Okay. Cody Stanman and Andre Yule. What are you saying?
Right, I think I'm going to go for Cody in this one. I'm a bit torn, to be honest, because I think if Cody goes in to wrestle Andre, and I think if Andre knows that, he's going to try and get him up through the center, like with knees, punches up through the through the middle. So I think he could potentially get caught with something like that. But I'm still going to go for Cody.
Yeah.
I like Cody. I think he's a good man.
I've been really impressed with Cody. We've seen him in the PI as well, watching him train, and he seems like he's got really good work ethic, and he was there with Sonia Dong as well, who he fought a draw to. Son, I remember speaking to Son, and he even pointed out like that was probably one of my toughest fights I've ever had. And you know, like Dan and Ollie were saying, Cody's got some reach as well, and I think if he can play that well, I think that's Cody's fight as well. So I'm going to go for Cody as well on that one.
Yeah. Well, Cody's got like a 7 or 8 inch reach disadvantage on Andre.
Oh, is it the other way around?
Andre's got the long reach.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm still picking Cody. Yeah. Let's go on to the flyweight. Pantoja and Cape. Or Cape.
Cape. Is it Cape or
Cape? Nah, it's Cape. Yeah. He's making his debut as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Is he from Ryzen?
Yeah. That's why I was saying Cape, because Ollie was saying that's how they pronounce.
Right, Pantoja, keep.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go for Pantoja on this one.
Yep.
I think he's really good. Really good in that division.
It's a dark horse, ain't it?
Yeah, yeah. And he had that loss against Figueiredo, but Figueiredo's badass, so
yeah,
can't really blame him for that. Yeah, I like Pantoja in this fight. I know, obviously, Capoeira's coming in on his debut, so it's like, don't really know how he's going to approach his first UFC fight, but yeah, I think Pantoja, with the experience he's got in the UFC, I think he'll take this one.
Yeah. I'm looking at it as well, and I'm just... So Pantoja coming off a loss as well with Askar Askarov. Obviously, that was a decision. Askar Askarov, in my opinion, is unreal. Mm. I really rate that guy. We were there as well for that, I believe, at Fight Island. He's got a win over Monero as well, Brandon Monero.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I know that he does have a lot of potential to get up there and start, you know, fighting for the belt, in my opinion. I think this is a good stepping stone towards doing that, like a sort of bit of a gift giving someone like Pantoja, someone on their debut. I'm not really quite sure. I don't understand really why that's happened unless this Cape guy is meant to be pretty phenomenal. I just don't really know too much about that Cape dude. But I do like an underdog. So you never know, man. Like, we've seen guys come in and perform and get like on debuts against good people. Like Joaquin Buckley came in on a debut against Kevin Holland and looked awesome. And I have faith in the UFC matchmakers that they know what they're doing here as well. So, you know, part of me wants to just go on no logic and go all in on Cape. Actually, I am. I'm going to do it. Yeah, I've convinced myself. I've changed it. So, yeah, I'm going to do that. So you're going Pantoja.
I'm
going to
go Pantoja, yeah. I just think he's all-round good fighter, like split decisions, submissions, KOs.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense, man. It does. Mm-hmm. But I'm just going to go for the complete flip side on this. A lucky guess I'm going for. Manel Cape. So what have you on so far? You gone Fiera, Cody Stanman, yeah, Pantoja.
Cody, yeah, and now Pantoja. So yeah, there. And you're going Cape on that one?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'm going Cape on that, yeah. Women's bantamweight, we've got, I don't know how you pronounce.
Marion Renault.
Nice. And Macy Chasson.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Macy. I don't really know too much about both of these guys, other than Macy. She's fought a lot more. And I think I have quickly had a look as well. I believe Marion is on a 3-fight losing streak.
Yeah, she is.
And we've seen people recently coming in on similar records and not performing. And I don't know if it's just the mental side of that burden carrying that, you know, that 3-fight loss backing you into a corner of a, this is my last chance. So just off that basis and Macy's record recently, I think logically Macy is probably the wiser pick there. So I'm going to go Macy.
So I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go for Marion.
Go on then.
Just because I know you said about the 3-fight win streak.
Losing streak.
And carry a lot of pressure. But I feel like that pressure can, especially with someone experienced like Marion, can work the opposite and encourage her to get the win.
True. And yeah, we did see as well, like, what's her name, who fought Rachel Ostrovich, can't remember her name.
Oh,
one with red hair.
Gina
Minazzi. Gina Mazzoni, that's it. She surprised me, and she was the underdog in that, and they were all on. So yeah. God, you just never know, do you? But Yeah. I'm going Macy on that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I'm going to go Marion. I've stole Ollie's notes a little bit here, but
yeah, we've been thrown into this like last minute here.
But the all the losses are by decision as well, which I think is quite interesting. Yeah,
that is interesting. Who, Macy's?
No, Marion.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, definitely losing it.
But yeah, I'm going to go Marion on this one.
All right, cool. All right, and then we'll go on to your boyfriend's next fight.
Who's that?
Cody.
Oh, Corey and...
Yeah, Corey, sorry. Yeah, Corey Sanhagen and Frankie Edgar. Obviously, I know you're going to pick Corey.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Corey.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Go on then.
It's just that new school...
Yeah.
...style of fighting. I don't think Frankie's going to be able to keep up with the pace.
Yeah.
And the changing stance and just that unorthodox striking. I think Corey's definitely going to take this one.
Yeah, I agree, to be fair. Depends, you know, Frankie could just take it to the ground instantly and just nullify him.
Like he did against you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's got to be a game plan when you're fighting someone like that. So if you can pull that off, you know, we've seen how debilitating it is for people in the first round to get taken down and it completely changed their game plan. Happened to McGregor as well recently. Yeah. It happens all the time when you get these two kind of styles of fights meeting. I think whoever gets to their game plan the quickest and most efficiently will probably win that, because they're both intelligent, they're both awesome athletes, and I think it's just going to come down to who can execute their game plan the quickest and the more effectively. And you know, if Corey can stay as intelligent as he has been, then...
But I think going back to the Edgar Yair as an example, I think Corey could probably do a better job on the floor.
Yeah.
If he got put in that position.
Yeah. Off his back as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think even if Frankie does execute it to a certain point, I think Corey's still always within a chance.
True.
Of getting back to his feet and, you know, fighting his own way.
Yeah. I agree. I'm going to go with Corey as well. No, I keep calling him Cody. But Corey Sanhagen, yeah. Mm-hmm. You going the same, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to go for the same as well.
All right.
That one.
Let's go to the main event.
Okay.
What are you saying? Alistair Overeem and Alexander Volkov.
Okay, Overeem's record is ridiculous. 47-18.
Yeah.
That is... nuts.
You've seen about that many fights, I think.
I'm gonna go for Overeem.
Yeah
I just think the momentum he's got at the minute, and it's his last run at the title, and everyone knows that and he knows that, and I just think with that momentum that he's got, he could beat someone like Volkov.
I agree, man. Even if when you look at his record and he's got a loss to Rosenstrike, he was winning that. We were watching that in Vegas together.
Oh, was that the floppy lip one?
Yeah, it was.
Damn.
And that's really, in my opinion, like, if it's a freak accident, and it obviously Rosenstrike won, but really he was winning that. And that's five really good fighters he's put away with TKO punches. Sergei Olenek, Walt Harris and Sakai, all TKOs. And he probably was going to get the decision on Rosenstrike. I just think he's just an intelligent fighter, really intelligent fighter, and I think so is Volkov. Like, that's one of the things that stands out when Volkov fights other people, is, to me anyway, he seems really intelligent inside that octagon. He's like energy expenditure as well, compared to other heavyweights, seems to be on par for for the top end of the league, of the division even. But I kind of see Alistair pulling this off.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think Volkov's fought very recently as well. And you can say that's an advantage to Volkov, but I think under these circumstances, I'd say it's more of an advantage for Overeem because when was Overeem's last? September.
Sakai, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I just think he's had a little bit more time to freshen up, to think about things, and he's a more, I can just imagine he's more cerebral about these types of things, going into these types of things, and I think that'll pay dividend with someone like Volkov.
I just find Volkov quite one-dimensional, and I think if Overeem in his last fight against Sakai, get him to the floor, like wear him out, just ground and pound him. I just think Overeem's got a lot more to his game.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot more avenues to go down than Volkov.
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. I completely agree there. So we're both going to go for Overeem, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sealed and dealed and dealt even. So let's have a little look what we just went over.
Yeah.
So your picks were Carlos Ferreira.
Yeah, Carlos Ferreira against Dariush. I think that's going to be go the distance, and Ferreira's going to take that.
Okay. And Cody and Andre Yule.
Yeah, I am a little, like I said, I'm a little bit torn, but I weighs more to Cody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pantoja, Cape.
Yeah, I'm going to go Pantoja over Cape.
And you're going for in the women's?
In the women's, I'm going to go for the experience of Marion Renault.
Okay. And then we're both going for Corey Sanhagen.
Yeah.
And both going for Overeem.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I've gone Benil Dariush, Cody, Manuel Cape, Macy Chasson, Corey Sanhagen, and Alistair Overeem. So we've just chose different twice.
Yeah, just the co-main and main event we've agreed on.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the rest, all different.
So do you think you're going to beat me?
Yeah.
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 Super confident. Really?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Wow. This will be interesting when the next one,
gotta be the review happens.
Yeah, well, we've seen what confidence does in your picks from Ollie's. Goes nowhere. Nah, that's cool then. So we're done, yeah?
Yeah, all good, man.
Awesome.
See how the fights go. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for tuning in. See you next time.